You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
But yeah, I mean, going solo, it has its good stuff and its not so good stuff. Like, there are days when I look at like a huge fan of Spirit Box now, and I look at Courtney and Mike, and they're a married couple, and like, you know, he's writing all the music and she gets to sing over top of them. And I'm like, I would love to have someone who's equally invested in a project as I am, as much as I am. We're on the same page where they're helping me compose the music and they're taking, like, you know, the workload off of my plate with writing and finances and marketing and business, you know what I mean? But like, there's that. But at the same time, it's like, I do get to call the shots and I know exactly the music I want to make. So it has its goods and its bads. I do sometimes miss the band dynamic, but at the same time, it's like you just learn to kind of breathe as an alpha female on your own. And I have an incredible team around me, both business and music, so no complaints, you know, but it gets lonely.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. Hope you had a killer week. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is Montreal's premier metal promoter. If you are ever in Montreal and you are looking for a great metal show to go to, well, trust me, Heavy Montreal will have you covered. They put on a bunch of killer shows all year long. They are simply the best. Goddamn stoked to have them behind the podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life that just loves extreme music, that just loves craft beer, well, you should absolutely let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. If you were to encourage one of your craft beer loving metalhead friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be with Lindsay Schoolcraft. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 437.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm very stoked to be with Lindsay Schoolcraft, a Canadian metalhead. Then, funnily enough, we've actually never crossed paths, which is something that baffles me because I feel like I know all the cool Canadian metalheads and metal musicians that have been successful throughout the years, but we've actually never crossed paths. We have played a festival together. I have fond memories of watching you at a Brutal Assault. I was seated at a place where I was not supposed to be because it's in an old fortress, and we sort of snuck upstairs up onto the high upper echelons of the fortress, which whatever is left of the fortress. And I do remember watching with Cradle Filth there, having an excellent time with my awesome friend Mega, who I'm going to be hanging out with shortly in Asia. And just, you know, shout out to Brutal Assault. And I won't do it again, Thomas, I swear, but I might, because it's such a good spot to watch shows. A long introduction to say, Lindsay, how you doing?
Hey, I'm really good. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to be with you. It's awesome to connect with successful Canadian metal musicians, especially people that I don't know. So very, very simple. How are you doing? I'm glad to be with you. How has this fall season been? We were talking a bit before we pushed record here about the heaviness of finishing up years. We're both feeling it. Talk to me about, you know, seeing the end light and walking towards it and crawling, dragging ourselves towards it, hypothetically.
Oh, God, I don't even know where to start. It's just been a really wild year. You know, and hey, like, you and I finally get to talk. Like, I've been waiting for this for a while, so this is sick. But yeah, this has been a really strange year. I feel like everyone this year is just tired, and that's okay, because we're waiting for a normalization from the dark days or the dark years a while ago. So yeah, just decided I was going to make a lot of changes to my life and my team and my career, and now, yeah, I feel that, like I said, dragging my corpse across the finish line. But I'm good. I'm happy. I'm accomplished. It's just, I'm definitely taking all of December off.
Good for you. I am also, and funnily enough, you are my last episode for 2023. I'm going to close up. I have been organizing breaks with the podcast throughout the past 2 years, where I do 3 months on and I take a month off. So you are going to be the final episode of 2023, aside from my top 10 episodes, which I still put out because I'm crazy. But I think something that you mentioned there was very interesting is the dark days that were behind us. I think a lot of us throughout the dark days took on a bunch of extra tasks, and because we had a bit more time, and then with the world opening up and our normal, let's say, normal tasks are back at full force, full swing, we still kept a lot of those extra tasks. At least I'm speaking for myself here 100% with the podcast running as hard as it did during the pandemic, and then now having Cryptopsy back running full time. It's been a struggle balancing both and trying to keep the level of consistency and my perfectionist issues, keeping things up to par with what I want them to be at in both fields.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that's why so many of us are overwhelmed, because we were stuck inside and we didn't have to leave the house, but now we have to leave the house. It's like, I got to go see my parents and see my friends and, like, you know, do run arounds and all that jazz. Like, more so, like, you know, I remember back in the dark days, it was like, I'd only go grocery shopping every 3 weeks. I'm like, what do you mean I have to go grocery shopping every week? That's 2 hours out of my schedule that, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm supposed to be doing stuff. So, yeah.
Where's my time? I missed the time.
Right. Wait,
like, we had daylight savings time recently, and it was the best day ever because I had an extra. I was sitting with my wife on the couch at the end of the night, and I was like, "This is a great day. We got so much stuff done because we had an extra hour."
Yeah. Now ridiculous. It doesn't feel like that anymore. Yeah. But.
During the pandemic, the dark days, as you've been calling it, ordering my groceries online. And that is one thing that I have continued to do. I never went back.
Listen, if you can afford it, go for it. Like, I'm the same way. I still order a lot of Uber Eats, especially when you're like crunched for deadlines. And you're like, I don't have time to cook. What's cooking?
I love cooking.
But yeah, so hopefully everyone finds their balance again next year. I mean, I'm definitely going to be dropping that, which does not work in the new year. So watch out, people.
Well, there you go. I like that. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers usually. But you do not drink. You're sober. So what are you going to be drinking on your side? You did do something craft, which I appreciate. What do you got going on your side there?
So I made a hot apple cider. So like, don't think I went out and like crushed the apples or have any special machinery. I just went and bought it from the local grocery store. Again, not 2 hours out of my week, so I don't get any more.
Sacrifices for Vox and Hops.
I know, right? Well, it's kind of left over from Halloween, Samhain. So, but yeah, I boil it in a pot with slices of orange and chai tea and cinnamon sticks. And it's so good. It's so full of sugar, though. Like, I'm going to be high on sugar for the next hour at least. So.
Good. I got you for that. And then you'll crash and I'll let you go. On my side, it's a special beer that two Vox and Hops alumni made together. Josh Barnett, the War Master, the UFC fighter. Now he's into wrestling. Did a collab with my good friend Eddie Torres from the RRBG podcast. They made a bourbon barrel aged barley wine, 11.5%. So basically it's a barley wine that they threw into Josh Barnett's bourbon barrels because he has his own bourbon company. This was a headache to make from what I've heard. They went through hell and back to finally get their hands on their beer, and they gave it to me when I was in LA. So I have not tasted this. They gave me two cans. Christian Donaldson enjoyed one of them after our gig at 1720 with Josh Barnett, where he gave him a chop on the chest, which was amazing to watch and witness across the internets. It's alive out there if you guys want to see that. I'm gonna crack this, and have you ever drank? Is that everything? I always ask about people's first beers. Did you ever have a beer?
Oh yeah. I've had a few beers in my time. I mean, like, I might look 12, but I'm approaching 40. And yeah, I used to drink beer, but the craft beer is the nicer stuff. But yeah, no, I haven't. I actually probably haven't had a beer in over 5-6 years.
Interesting. So what would be that very first beer experience? Do you have a story? Is it an Oshawa experience? Is it something embarrassing? Because they tend to be.
I mean, no, like the first time I got drunk was my 19th birthday, and it was off of those like Vex, those stupid Vex coolers. But then, yeah, then I really got into like drinking a whole pitcher of beer, going out for nachos. Usually I like Bud. I don't know why. was 22. I had like no taste. Okay. Like, don't judge me.
That's okay. I had no taste at 22 either, Lindsay.
None of us did. We're all faking it.
So what happened 5 years ago to make you turn the page and to step away from drinking in general?
Oh, mental health, physical health, finances. You know, when you have really big career goals and ambitions, you just can't spend another day hungover, and I get really bad hangovers, and then I lie in bed super depressed and anxious and beating myself up, and I'm like, that's enough. But then the dark days happened and I relapsed for about a year and gained 30 pounds.
Ooh,
and
shit.
And that was when I was, and I'm a tiny person, so that's when I was like, oh crap, this is like, you know, you just don't want to wake up every day hating yourself. So I was like, yeah, no, it's got to go again. I was on a 2-year streak. It was a really good 2-year streak. And then, yeah, so I came back around, and I just say, no, I'm dry till I die. I don't like how alcohol makes me feel. And that's just my choice. But I'm not going to be like, you know, tell my friends not to drink if they want to drink. Like,
no, it's a very, very personal journey with most substances or vices, we could say. And I do agree that, and I had that same thought process when I just embarked on Cryptopsy's recent tour. I was having conversations with my wife, Jessica, producer of the podcast. And there was this, like, you know, you're back out there. There's so many people with my relationship with alcohol. People like to bring me stuff, such as this beer. So there was this slippery, dangerous thing of, like, you can just overindulge and then you forget why you're actually out on the road or what your goals actually are. And that was something that I'm glad that I reflected upon before I went on tour, because it was a conscious mental decision each night to not have that extra beer and to go to bed and to wake up and to feel good and to enjoy the next day as much as the previous day. So having goals and realizing that those goals were not being accomplished or were being impeded from being accomplished more easily because you were feeling like shit from drinking is something that's a good step that you took towards. When you stopped that first time, was it a dry till you die, or was it, hey, let's just take a break and see how I feel type thing?
It was like the first time. It was definitely, I needed a break because, like, I was in Cradle of Filth, and that crew parties really hard. And there was like, just everyone could drink a bottle of wine a night. And it's like, you're on tour and you're doing your own teching. And, you know, I was like, makeup and hair and wardrobe and social media and A&R and secretary. Like, I was doing all these things, and I was like, and it, you know, like, I can say I am an alcoholic, a recovering alcoholic, like, it runs in my family. And there's just no, like, in your case, you're so lucky that you can be like, I'll just enjoy one, or I'll just enjoy two. And that's like enough. Like, when you're an alcoholic and you have an addiction, it's 0 to 100. Like, there's no, you know, you just keep going until, like, I've spent, and you said you didn't like flying, I've spent so many hours at the airport hungover, and it's just like the worst moments of my life. And then, you know, fans come up to you and you don't want to talk to them, and you're like, this sucks. I don't want my fans to think that I hate them, because I don't. I just feel like throwing up right now.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So it was just like, you know, I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to drink, because when I go home, everyone drinks. And when I'm on tour, if I drink, like, it's going to get in the way of trying to make things happen for myself and this band. So then I said, I'll only drink on weddings. And then I went to Sydney to my friend's wedding, and I got so drunk, like, I barely remember half of the night. And I'm like, okay, I clearly have a problem.
Yeah. Like, there's only 100%. There's no 20%. You're all in once the tap goes.
I'm committed to this. So, you know, and then the pandemic hit, and it was kind of a hard moment where I should have just been like, no, we're not doing this again. But when the pandemic, the dark days hit, I was on a plane to the Junos, landing in Saskatoon. And then when we landed, the Junos were canceled, and we had a hotel room that night, and we had to book our flights back early. And I just felt like I lost everything, because, like, I was like, that was my dream since I was 15. I had first spot on the red carpet. I didn't care. Like, Stryker won that year, and Stryker deserved the win. They're incredible. I still don't, to this day, like, I can't fathom I even got nominated. And it was such a beautiful year, because there was The Agonist and Cobra and the Lotus and A Single Mother's. It was just like such a cool year. And I lost everything. So the guys were just sitting around drinking and I just said, fuck it. Then I just started. And then I, you know, and I went down that path and the person I was with at the time saw me going down that path and saw me struggling and didn't do or say anything about it. And I really don't believe that's love. I think if you love someone, you're going to at least say something. You know, I understand everyone's like, they're allowed to their own devices. But if you watch someone slowly destroying themselves and you don't do or say anything about it, like how much do you really care for that person? Ultimately, that's why that relationship ended. Because of the lack of like understanding that mature partnership that was needed there. But yeah, I just hit a point. I was about to fly out and work with the Cancer Bats on a performance that they had and join them for some instrumentation and backing vocals. It was like their live thing that they did for YouTube. And that's, I was like, I weighed the most I ever weighed. And I was like, I'm done. Like I've got, I don't feel good. I'm not happy. Like this is bad. And that was when I was like, okay, like this is it.
Try to die.
Yeah. Yeah. So it happened around my birthday. So.
We got to go through struggles in life. It's you learn the most through the darkest days.
Yes. Yep. And absolutely. I've had a few.
And you have, yeah, we all have, luckily we have, because that's how we grow. And especially as artists and as humans and having that experience and now having this newfound vision in your life and in new relationships. You got to go through the shit to get to the good, sadly.
Yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way. Look at my life now and, you know, 4 years ago leaving Cradle and like everything. I look at life now and I'm like, nah, shit's good. You know, but it's up to you to pull yourself out of it and get you there. Like, that's the thing that people don't understand. It's not like all of a sudden things just start getting better. It's like you make those decisions and do the hard work for it to get better.
Absolutely. Was it basically impossible for you to stay in Cradle and be sober? I would imagine not. There's a lot of bands that have members that are sober. There's other bands where, especially if it's a key member, and I don't know if this is public knowledge, so I'm not going to bring out the band's name, but basically it's a dry camp because this one primary member of the band cannot have it around.
That's fair. And that's the thing, like when I sobered up being in Cradle, they at first, some certain members didn't really understand it and kept forgetting and trying to like pass me drinks. And I'm like,
you're not helping.
No, I'm serious. Like, and I like people like that, like they just don't have the intelligence and maturity to understand that person's autonomy and their boundaries, and that's on them. But like I've gone vegan and I've had to refuse dish after dish after meal. I'm like, I don't put this in my body. You know what I mean? So in the beginning, I think they're just a bit like they understood. And then they, you know, there was an understanding. So like, yeah, absolutely. Like there would have been no issue with me being sober and staying in that band.
Okay. Awesome. I love to hear about the soundtrack of your youth. When you're growing up in your parents or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
It was just like top 40. So a lot of top 40 of the late 80s. And then all the good shit that happened in the 90s, all the good shit, like everything from like Baxter Boys and NSYNC, Spice Girls, Britney Spears, Whitney Houston, like all that stuff, like the good stuff that was on TV and on the radio. But the cool stuff that my parents brought in was like ABBA, Cher, Bee Gees. And then my dad introduced me to like Eagles, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, like cool shit like that. So I'm really grateful for the stuff that they brought into the household, and even like Johnny Cash and, you know, yeah, that was what we'd listen to around the house. Beatles was a big one too.
What would be something that you brought into the house that shared with them, much to hypothetically their dismay, or something that they enjoyed?
I'm just trying to think. I really liked Dido and Moby. And my dad really got into them. So he would like put those CDs on the stereo system and they'd be cool with it. Around the time I knew that like my love of Blink-182 and pop punk would not be shared with them, but they seemed to really like that first album from Evanescence. So they wouldn't mind playing that one around the house. That was like mid high school for me. But yeah, like I never really expected them to really, like, once I turned like 13, 14 and the angst set in, I was like, this is my music. I don't want to share this with you. Okay. You're too old. You don't understand.
Like me. Yeah.
You don't understand.
Would you wear the headphones or would you blast it? But it was yours.
I had the crappy foam headphones with the plastic band and on the Discman or the Walkman.
Yes.
And I still have it to this day, at least the Discman. I can see
it from here.
You're
looking at it, I can tell you.
Yeah, I was like, it's the glimmer in my eyes. So many hours of happiness on that display.
People that we used to run with it and it would skip
I know, right? and then they brought it one that like didn't skip.
It still skipped.
it's like, all right, I'm gonna go dirt biking with this. We're gonna test this out.
At what point did the voice come into your life? You play so many instruments. You got, you play piano, you play harp, the vocals. What would be first? What was your first love? What did you fall into first as a musician? What would be the first instrument?
It was the bass guitar.
Interesting.
I played it for 6 years and I got really bored because, like, bless my teacher, he tried so hard to keep me interested and he showed me some really cool shit. And I learned with fingers. Like, he's like, no, you're going to be like proper bassist. You're going to learn with fingers. You're going to not have any sympathy chords or sympathy strings going on. You're going to like be a good player. And then he started getting me into slap and funk. And that's when I just was like, I don't care. But, and I told this to Alex from Cannibal Corpse recently. I said, if I was introduced to extreme like heavy technical death metal, I think I would have stuck with it. You'd see me in some band by now playing bass guitar. But my teacher didn't know, so my teacher didn't expose me to it, and then I just, Evanescence ruined my life, and I was in classical singing and piano forever after that. So
interesting. Well, what was it about Evanescence that just captivated you? Was it the magic and the black metal? Was it the what got you there? Was it the angstiness of it?
It was just so magical. It was like they could do this industrial undertow with this new metal, alternative guitar at the time, but it was also like it had piano and strings. And I was like, I loved a lot of classical music. I love the piano. I love what the band was doing. And I love those little like scratchy drum loop electronic moments, which I know that there's a huge trip hop influence in that band. That's one of my favorite genres. So like it all just kind of, it's like it just all mashed together. And I'm like this impressionable 16-year-old. And, I'm singing a lot at this point, too. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but I definitely know I want to make music similar to this. And that's what just threw, I still have my bass guitar today. I actually started playing my bass again just for shits and giggles. But, oh, God, I'm so bad. So out of practice. It's been 20 years. But, I just decided I want to get into singing lessons and I want to like be a better composer and singer and learn the piano. And like, I went hard into that for at least a decade. So it felt like a decade. I'd say it was more like 6 years, but it was a very long 6 years.
Well, if you do something in school professionally, like going to school for real, real, it takes time. Back to the bass. Why the bass though? How did that happen? I want that story. Was it a band? Was it like they were missing a bassist and you had no choice but to pick up a bass? How did the bass end up in your hands?
I think because my dad plays guitar and there was guitars around the house and I would play, but I just was not getting the hang of it. And then I discovered Blink 182 and I saw like Mark playing the bass guitar and I was like, oh, that looks like way more fun. Like, I just want to do that. And I got one for my birthday when I was 15. That was the end of it. So
how much easier is the bass to, you say that you're not very proficient at the bass at this exact moment compared to a harp?
Oh God, the harp was like that was just like my quarter life crisis, like impulse decision. I was in university. I had OSAP money. I found a harp dealer because like they're a lot more accessible now, but we're talking back in 2010. There was like one person who sold harps in all of Ontario down in London, Ontario. For those who don't know, that's like the west south end near like,
right near
you know,
Detroit.
Not even near, not, yeah. yes, Detroit. Thank you. I was like, no, not Niagara, Detroit. And I had to like drive out 3 hours with like $2,000 cash. Like, that's all she would take.
Basically a drug deal.
It felt like it. I was like, oh God, am I gonna die? Like, are they gonna turn my guts into harp strings? Like, what's going on here?
I love that.
So, so by the way, I use nylon strings, not animal gut strings. But yeah, so I'm looking at her right now, and I just went out and I was like, you know, at that point I was really proficient with piano and classical piano. And I was like, this is nothing like piano. It's like a whole other, it's almost like playing a bow and arrow. Like, there's no other way to describe it, but it's been a long journey. I think it took me about 3 years of like hard, dedicated practice to get proficient at it, you know. And even now I'm kind of after the year I've had, I haven't played it too much, but we'll see what the winter holds.
I think it's cool. Whenever I see people that play the harp, like let's say on public transport or stuff like that, same thing with an upright bass type thing, I'm like, this person commits. This person's into it. If you can drag that around, you're in love.
Yeah, we get spoiled as harpists though. There's like these harpsichord harps now. They're like really portable and they're electric and they're great. I have one. I've like Frankensteined into my own thing. So, you know, I'm excited to always show up to the studio with that because it's about the size of a guitar now. So,
oh, it's so cool.
Yeah.
Back to you growing up. What would be your first musical experience? The first thing that you went to go see?
Oh, that's a really good question. My parents love their silence, and they were not big concert goers. They were so just like overwhelmed by the lifestyle of the 90s of like owning a house and their careers and like all of our family stuff that like the last thing they wanted to do on the weekend was go to a concert.
Drive into Toronto and
yeah, this that was the thing back then. Nothing came out here to Whitby, Oshawa. So, you know, the most they would do was like take us to the, you know, the CN or like, you know, in the fall, the exhibition or the zoo, you know what I mean? Because me and my sister loved animals. Like, it was just like that was the extent of it. It was like, there's no way in hell you'd catch my parents at a live concert. They're really not like that even now in their retired years. But it was in high school. Like, my first concert was at the Opera House. I was 15. And I went to see, I can't remember which one it was. I went to see, there's two that I remember. I don't remember which one was first. I went to see Not By Choice with, I think they were called The Salads. I could be wrong. They were ska. And Cauterize was opening. No, Toe was opening, but they turned into Cauterize. That was a really weird lineup. And then there was another one at the Phoenix. It was like the Ataris, when they just put out their Boys of Summer cover. Yeah. And
that was so big.
They had Sugar Cult, Autopilot Off, and Rufio opening for them. So I have a big background in pop punk. Like, that was my origins.
Yeah. I can tell. That was like 2001, I want to say.
Maybe.
When the Boys of Summer came out, I remember I was in CJEP. I think it was my second semester, maybe third semester, when that was so big. Mm-hmm. That Ataris.
Yeah. But then like Papa Roach was blowing up with their hit. Absolutely. And same with Jimmy Eat World, you know, and there was just this big, like, what a great time for music between like early 2000s to like the time I graduated around 04, 05, because things got a little weird 06 and beyond, but there's this really nice time for music. And it was a good like potpourri. You'd have pop punk and punk and new metal and alternative. And like, I really loved A Perfect Circle at the time. Oh, hell so. Yes.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's when I like started going to shows. And for me, it was just like, holy shit. Like, I just, it really solidified that that's what I wanted to do. And it makes me really happy because I have played the Opera House in the Phoenix now.
Hell
so
yes.
It's pretty cool.
It's actually the first place that I met Lord Worm was at the Opera House.
Lord Worm.
When he was still singing for Cryptopsy before I was in Cryptopsy. And I'm not sure I said this on the podcast. I probably have. He got completely naked while I was speaking to him after the show. And I imagine I was just probably infringing upon his personal time and space.
So is this him asserting dominance?
Maybe.
Yeah.
hypothetically sound, it's maybe I was a bit too eager to have a conversation with him right after he got off stage. Maybe. Have I stolen that move from him? I have not.
Well, whenever you really don't want to talk to someone.
Oh, I stayed, though. You just, you know, you maintain eye contact and you just keep going. I guess I was a punisher.
Or brave, maybe. Yeah, wow.
The Opera House. That shower was something back in the day.
It's way better now.
I know, I've heard.
But back in the day, oh.
Yeah, it was basically a pipe with no shower head, if my memory serves me correct. And shout out to Noel from Inertia, who booked us all. And now it's a Live Nation, so he doesn't do shows there anymore. But I remember Noel doing that. Talk to me about being solo versus collaborating with people. It's been 10 years now, basically, that you're releasing music as a solo artist. So many songs, so many creations. At what point did you being solo become such an important part of your identity versus being in a band? You're most notably known for being with Cradle of Filth, obviously. What is the difference between collaborating in someone else's project and doing your own stuff?
Oh man, that's a good question, dude. And I was actually thinking about this earlier today. I don't remember why, but something came up and it was like my first band out of high school was called Princess Riot. And we were like a very Jack off Jill, Letters to Cleo, pop punk kind of outfit. And then when we dissolved, I did another thing called Mary and the Black Lamb, which was like this, like kind of, you know, pop goth rock thing. And I think I've just always been a solo artist. I just kind of hid behind other bands because who does a solo act in metal and rock? Like
right out of the gate, Like I'm a solo artist.
And I think also at the time, like Avril Lavigne was getting a lot of shit for it because she's a solo artist who does this like pop, sometimes a one-off pop punk song here and there. And it's just like, she's a pop star. Like, she's a poser. No one takes her seriously.
She has writers with her. So she's not a solo artist. And that was a big thing back in the day, too, though. Be a solo artist, you had to actually be the sole creative genius. When in reality, that's not true. It's a fallacy.
It takes a village. Like, there's a whole team behind every artist and every band. You know what I mean? Even, like, people don't realize the business team that goes behind metal bands these days. And the crew and the production is just, it's wild. So yeah, I always just hid behind bands. And then eventually the second time my band fell apart, it was due to egos and like not having the same direction. And like, I was the one funding everything and managing everything, but like no one was respecting me. And I was like, I'm not doing this again. Like, I was writing music for Mary and the Black Lamb coming out of it. And I was like, I'm keeping this for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I just decided to go solo. And it was wild. The minute that I did it and I released my first EP, which was like not metal at all. It was just like this chill, ambient, goth stuff, like ballads and shit, symphonic ballads, I guess you could say. That's like just when everything took off. But then, of course, like right after I released it, 6 months later, I'm on a plane to go meet Cradle of Filth. And I'm like, shit, I joined another band. Crap. Like, I don't do well in bands, but it wasn't my band.
That's a big exception. That one. It's a rolling machine that you just stepped onto. You basically strapped yourself onto a rocket and enjoyed seven years of party time.
Yeah. Party time. Excellent. Yes. Oh yeah. It was a Cradle came and went very quickly. But yeah, I mean, going solo, it has its good stuff and it's not so good stuff. Like, there are days when I look at like a huge fan of Spirit Box now, and I look at Courtney and Mike, and they're a married couple, and like, you know, he's writing all the music and she gets to sing over top of them. And I'm like, I would love to have someone who's equally invested in a project as I am, as much as I am. We're on the same page where they're helping me compose the music and they're taking, like, you know, the workload off of my plate with writing and finances and marketing and business, you know what I mean? But like, there's that. But at the same time, it's like, I do get to call the shots and I know exactly the music I want to make. So it has its goods and its bads. I do sometimes miss the band dynamic, but at the same time, it's like, you just learn to kind of breathe as an alpha female on your own. And I have an incredible team around me, both business and music, so no complaints, you know. But it gets lonely. It's a very lonely endeavor.
What always comes to my mind when I speak to solo artists is the writing process and knowing when it's good enough is something that always comes to my mind. How do you know when a song is finished? How do you know when it's done? Because typically in a band setting, it ends up being like a circle of approval where like you think, oh, here's my idea. Right. I like this. And then another person's like, oh, it is a good idea. You're right. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, the song is done. Oh, no, it's good enough. Let's do next. When right. you're alone, you got to do this with yourself, multiple personalities, hypothetically.
I know a song is done when it doesn't feel like anything's missing and it feels like everything flows. That's just, you know, like if there's a part that's missing or there's a harmony that's missing or structurally it's missing something. Like when I listen, to something beginning to end, I'm like, that's got to go. That sound is weird. I don't like it. It's like nails on a chalkboard for me. Like once it's like nothing's missing and everything flows, I can listen to the song beginning to end and I thoroughly enjoy it. And I'm enjoying the listener's journey, even though I've at that point heard it like 1,000 times. And I'm like, part of me is like, oh, I'm so over this song. Like, can we be done? I just try to silence that voice because it's a very YOLO moment where you're like, when this is done, this is out there forever. And it's like, I hate recreating old songs. That's a whole other story with Patreon.
I was heading towards Patreon.
We have a lot to talk about with Patreon because, oh boy, howdy, do I have some shit to share on that. But I've felt it when it's like, okay, like all the instrument, the guitar is right, the bass is right, the drums are right, the orchestration's where I want it to be. Like, you know, these parts, these simpler, quiet parts do what they're supposed to do. You just, like, for me, it's an intuition. You just know.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right, I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode.
Patreon. It's a lot of work. Cryptopsy was independent for many, many years, and releasing music on your own is a lot of work. We dabbled with the idea of doing a Patreon probably about 5-6 years ago, and with the podcast and just doing everything that I was doing for the real world with no Patreon subscribers and just imagining and having conversations with my wife Jessica about if we did start a Patreon, the amount of extra work that would go into it. I knew that for a band setting of running something like that is a momentous task. And already with Cryptopsy, it takes us so long to actually release stuff to the mass public. To do it to subscribers was something that just was a daunting task. So talk to me about running a Patreon and the wonderful things that go on with that, because it sounds like you got some stuff to say.
Well, I mean, it was definitely one of those things that started during the dark days where we had all this extra time to do things. Yes. And I think it took me about 2 years before I found my footing. But doing it by yourself it's a lot. There's like schedules, deadlines, like carving out time for it. I have a very like ridiculously structured, like I showed my boyfriend the other day my calendar and all, like he's just like, oh my God.
I'm how
like,
do you do like, this?
Yeah, but it's like, this is how I get like all the things I got going on right now. This is how shit gets done, whether I feel like it or not. There's daily reminders telling me what to do. It's
record
like
your intros, do that.
Yeah, past me telling future me what to do. So it's great. But you know, I came to a point where I was just giving so much. And I mean, I have about 100 people on there at all times, but I was giving like way more than what I was getting in return, and it was burning me out. So I structured it in such a way that, you know, it's like doing things that have like a low output, high return, like the podcast that I have on there now and some other things, like, you know, releasing a 20-second clip of whatever I'm working on, which people seem to love. Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, it was brave, because I also was released. I was also like fully releasing my demos on the highest tier. And I'm like, this is garbage, but someone's garbage is someone else's treasure. So like, knock yourself out. But the coolest thing that happened with my Patreon is, before I joined Cradle Filth, I started this folder on my laptop called I Don't Know What I'm Doing. And I just write these songs and I just chuck them into this folder to die in the back of my computer, my old PC behind me. And it was just weird stuff. It was like a lot of piano ballads crying about some dude who wasn't worth it, but a lot of like cool, like spooky trip hop influenced stuff, which like I'm a huge fan of, like Bjork and Massive Attack and Portishead and
hell yes,
the whole family umbrella of trip hop. Love
tricky,
it.
Tricky.
It's my jam. Yeah, Tricky, Uncle, all of them. So
Uncle, I love Uncle.
Yes, very cool, right? Yeah. So I was like, I found it when I was planning my Patreon, because we were going through like my computers and looking for old content. I had like years of content, quote unquote content, photo shoots behind the scenes that I've just never released because I'm very like, get it done and get on to the next thing.
It's funny how much we forget. Yeah.
Right. And I found this folder and I'm like, there's like an album's worth of material in here. This is ridiculous. So every 3 months for the past 3 years, I have done a track. Some of them have been metal. Some of them have already been released. And that in itself was a lot to juggle. It's like, okay, by month one, it has to be written. By month two, it has to be in production. By month three, it has to be like vocals tracked and being mixed, right? And something that was like, there was like the song Twin Flame and Undying Love, my patrons will know what I'm talking about. Those were like complete downloads from the universe, like new shit. Let's just like, let's do this. Where a lot of it was old stuff and recreating it. And I'm going into my last month of this with a piano ballad. And after this, I never, ever, ever, ever want to write a piano ballad ever again. Like, this is my last go. I'm going to write a piece like, and most of it's been like electronics and strings and like this big like sound, I guess, production. This is just going to be very like chill out just on a piano. But it's hard because the song, some of these songs are like 12, 14 years old, right? They're really, really old and they should have just been left in the past to die. And I'm over here like trying to breathe new life into them. And it's sometimes the challenge is cool, but other times there's this other voice in the back of my head, like, you need to be working on new shit in your next album. Like, what are you doing? You know, so.
No, I can totally feel that because it takes emotional and energy to compose. And even if you're like working on stuff that you've already written, you still have to own up to it and showcase it with today's eyes and your yeah. expectations of your musical self now, even if it was written 14 years ago. So that is scary. And right. your last solo big release was 4 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
So that looming like new album is in the back of your mind pushing. So you're finishing up this last 3 month endeavor for the past 3 years, you're saying. And then new album is coming is basically what you're hinting at.
Yeah. And I'm sure my patrons will be super stoked about that because everyone has wanted a heavy album from me since the last one. I don't even consider the last one to be a heavy album. There's like 2.5 heavy songs on there and the rest of it's just like chilled out like gothic metal. It's not like heavy or aggressive. It's just sad and like it's like doom pop or something. Like it's just ridiculously, you know, a lot of it's really chill. And the thing is that a lot of people don't know is like over the dark days, the dark years, I did like 5 albums. Like I did Worlds Away, and then I was producing an album for an artist and they scrapped it last minute. That's fine, no hair up, like no skin off my back is what I'm gonna say. Like it's fine. I did the Cold Bound album. I finished composing the Antiqua album. And then I've been doing this quote unquote album on Patreon. So it's like, that's a lot
that's
of
a
music.
Lot of work.
Like, I
Holy
think
Christ,
in 2021, I wrote 52 songs. I wrote and produced and was a part of 52 songs. I was like, yo, I think that I don't remember, it's 2021 or 2022.
Do you find yourself drained after that? Where you don't even want to see an instrument?
Yes and no. I mean, I still like to sing, but it was kind of the ending of like composing the Antiqua album, which is this big like symphonic meets black metal beat. And I was like, oh my God. By the end of that, I had one last writing trip with a guitarist. He flew in from Germany and we went to a cabin in the middle of nowhere, Quebec, with Justine.
Love her,
our drummer.
I love her.
She's just I shared a jam
with her for many years.
Yeah. She's just one of my favorite people to ever live. And we were wrapping up the last few songs and they're like, are you okay? And I'm like, I have nothing left to give. So
you're like a dried apple that was forgotten in the back of the fridge.
Yeah, or like left in the the dehydrator for too long, like a beached coral, just crispy and crusty. Yeah. And I was like, all right. And it took me a long time to get that back. Like, I didn't start getting the itch to want to write the next album until this year, but then I got a new job and I was like, oh shit. And I had to go back to school while I was working. And,
wow.
But I've been slowly working on the new songs for the next album.
Good suffering. Yes.
It's a good suffer. Yeah. But now it's like, okay, we know what the schedule's like. I did my education. I have my job. I know how much time I have during the week. So now it's like totally pulling an Avril Lavigne, Taylor Swift. Like, I got like three people writing for me. It's like, let's do this.
I think that's awesome. Very, very awesome. Something that's important for me and the podcast, and something that which is why I take breaks now, is mental health. One of the big reasons you stated your departure from Cradle was mental health. Talk to me about your mental health and how you cope with everything, the darkness. In your statement when you left, you mentioned therapy. Talk to me about how you cope with these dark days, especially after going through the dark days.
Right. Okay. So, like, you know, I leave Cradle and then the dark days hit. The dark days. I love that we call it that.
I know. It's a thematic. Yeah. I might call it the dark days with Lindsay Schoolcraft.
Everyone, I stole that from my partner, Corey Hoffing. That was him entirely. He started calling it the dark days.
I wasn't going to bring him up, but since you did, I love him. And he's a Vox and Ops alumni. Yeah,
he's good people. I've always been so grateful for his friendship. And now that I get to date him, I'm over the moon. So
he's awesome. Yeah. I met him many, many years ago when he was playing drums for Hello Beautiful.
Oh my God. That was like his first punk band or first band.
Definitely. We played a library in Toronto together. That's also I met Mel Cleal. Mel Cleal was with Fuck the Facts that night.
That is wild. I had no idea. He never told me that story. That's pretty cool. That's really epic. He loves you. He doesn't shut up about you. Back to mental health. I could talk about him forever because he's my favorite person. Let's see. So, yeah, I just got to a point where with Cradle, they move in such a way where they don't really take breaks. Like, they'll tour. We did two world tours in 2 years, like 2018 and 19. And then, like, I got home and immediately they wanted us to start writing the follow-up for Cryptoriana. And I just, like, got to the piano and, like, I think I wrote like one piece, which I eventually just released on Patreon, a piano piece. And I just tried to compose to what was being thrown at me. There was nothing there. And I just cried. And I'm like, I have to leave. This isn't fair to the band. This isn't fair to me. I had clinical burnout. Like, I just couldn't do it anymore. And it was a really hard decision to make. But like, ultimately, I was so burned into the ground. And at the time, I was also surrounded by a lot of narcissists who are being very abusive to me. And that falls from my childhood. You know, like, when you're growing up around narcissists, you are taught to fawn and people please, and it turned me into great narcissist bait or being a narcissistic supply for adults later on. So I got into therapy because if I kept going the way I was going with the expectations that were held on me, which were extremely unrealistic, like, some within Cradle because they don't know how to take breaks, but also in like my own personal life, my friend group, and, you know, my solo career. And I had to let a lot of people go. And I did a lot of hard therapy because, like, if I stayed, if I kept going, I wouldn't be here today. Like, it was just getting really, really tough. It was really tough because, like, you know, when you're around narcissists for so long, they truly make you believe that, like, you're not worth anything. And they just do that because they know that you can do and be and offer so much more than they ever could because they're so flawed, you know, bless them. But I, you know, I just let people have an opinion of me and wear me down and make me feel like worthless. So through months, like almost a year of intense therapy with my regular therapist and a psychologist, it really built back up my self-esteem. And that's the thing, like I was fighting for my life and I was doing the work. And that's the thing that I'm seeing in my life now is a lot of people go to therapy, but they don't do the work. Mm-hmm. They don't like
fix me.
Come away.
Fix me.
Yeah. They just want someone to like listen to their problems and then just go about another week. It's kind of like the Christian who goes to confession on Sunday, but then keeps sinning all week. Like it's just, it's not, you have to be the catalyst to create the better life for yourself. So, you know, through lots of hard work, I rebuilt myself. And then, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to start my Patreon. And I'm, you know, during that time, even though I was in therapy, I did Worlds Away, even though it's like purely just a harp album and like with strings, like, it's an album that nobody asked for, but I did it for me. By the end of my journey, like my therapist is like, you know, you're good to go. My psychologist really broke down like what happened in my childhood and helping repair it. And then about a year later, I crashed again and I went back to my therapist and she's like, okay, I think I know what's going on here. So there's no official diagnosis because here in Canada, it's expensive and it's different for women than it is for men. But my therapist just put me through therapy for being autistic and I just started thriving. I just was like, this is my brain. This is how it works. This is who I am. And since then I've been able to really, between, you know, a little bit of ADHD and OCD and anxiety, I've just been able to regulate everything and tell my brain to stop and really function again. But like, I just went from one extreme to the other with like workaholism and perfectionism. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, everyone's like, yeah, but you make so much happen. It's like, yeah, but you've never seen me crash. Like I hide when I crash. No one hears from me for a week. And I just couldn't keep doing that. So
it's almost as if each crash takes us down even further though.
And that's what started happening again. And then I realized that the person I with didn't understand me, didn't want to understand me, wasn't good for me. You know, we grew apart and, like I had to go back and do a little more hard work to put myself in a place where at least I'm stable enough to keep functioning. But yeah, it's mental health is super important to me, but it's something that I think a lot of people don't realize is like when your therapist sends you home with homework and a book to read or a podcast to listen to, like you have to do it. And I say that right now as I have a life coach who's sending me like, given me like 6 weeks worth of homework and I haven't even started yet.
Can we still have time after this?
Yes, I'm taking December off. Laura, don't worry. I'm going to do my homework.
That is important. A lot of people just like get therapy and then they think that they can get therapy or pay for something to fix them.
Right. Not realizing like fix you.
No, it's like they give you a framework that you have to analyze yourself.
Yes. And that's, I think it comes when you realize like my biggest pet peeve is self-sabotaging behavior. And when you see the bad habits you have and the self-sabotaging behavior and how much it robs you of potential opportunity, energy, all the good things that life has to offer you. It's like, I don't want to do that anymore because I am robbing myself from the future I could have. So this needs to stop, you know? But until you have that level of awareness and accountability, it's a mess. And I've been there. So
you got to grow, you got to live, you got to go through, you got to get through the trenches to get onto the higher ground. And it's the second time I bring it up, but you got to go through the shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's those moments in therapy, like I can think of one big breakthrough moment where I cried for like a day.
Wow.
When I realized, like, I don't think I'd ever truly been loved the way that I want to be loved. And that like hurts so much because like, I've just been chasing this dragon.
That's so sad.
That doesn't exist. And then I was little, it's, you know, my parents are who they are, but they weren't like, I'm not ungrateful for them. I love them very much, but they weren't like a match for me. Like you had, are they an intellectual match, an emotional match? Like, and my parents are like, they're people, they're cool, they're great. They did the best they knew how to do, but I needed more of like an emotionally, intellectually mature person to help me like guide me through life. Whereas like just being a provider is, it's great. And it's, I don't appreciate it, but it, for me mentally wasn't enough. And that moment where I was like, I've never really been loved how I want to be loved. It just, and you look back at all your relationships and you're like, girl, why'd you settle for less? But you just like, you want, you just, you so desperately want it and you fall in love with potential hoping you're going to get it. And like, this stops today.
Good for you.
So
thanks. My gosh.
But yeah.
And having toured with a bunch of people and been in bands with a bunch of people and being a little bit strange myself, the autism spectrum is all over the arts.
Oh, yeah. Neurodivergence for life. We're everywhere.
All over the arts. We are mm-hmm. both sponsored by an awesome company called Audio Technica. We are both artists. Yeah. So talk to me about that relationship. I'm using this mic right now. I like it. I'm enjoying it. It's my first time having it on a stand, and I have my hands to myself, which is fun. Talk to me about that relationship. I remember you in your post when you announced it, or on your website at least, you mentioned it was a dream of a lifetime. Talk to me about working with Audio Technica.
Oh, I love them. They're so supportive. I was ripping on this one today here. Well, let's see if I can get it over here. It's behind a little mesh thing right now, but it's my AT4040. I like to keep that on because it gets dusty in here. And I love their headphones. They sent me lots of headphones. I'm like, hell yeah. Hell so yes. I got one for
shout
the road,
out to Mike
one for
Marino.
Home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Mike. He is the coolest. Yeah. It was just like, it came about. I was doing the show earlier this year. What a disaster. I did this show with a bunch of string players during an ice storm in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And
I saw that
too. Half of the people couldn't make it. Shout out to everyone who bought a ticket, though. Like, on paper, it looked great, but...
Yeah, that ice storm was a real thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was bad. And Mike actually came out and said, hey, we really want to make you an artist. And I was like, no way. Like, no. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. So we went ahead with it, and they've just been amazing, and it's such an honor, and I love... you know, being a producer myself, I just love working with their stuff. I've always been a big fan. So yeah, they're the best. And I can't wait to grow with them in the future as my career and production career grows over time. So yeah, they're a good family to be part of.
I like it. Me too. I feel very happy being a part of it. Talk to me about collabs. I love collabs. I was counting today because I bid a bunch of posts for my beer collabs. I think I released 35 beers this week. This week. I released 35 beers.
This week alone?
I released 35 beers this year. About 80 of them since the birth of the podcast.
So cool.
Talk to me about something that would be perfect for you, a Lindsay Schoolcraft collab. What would be the perfect collab? And I imagine maybe, actually, now that I was thinking about it as we were talking, did you have anything to do with the Cradle of Filth Pitch Black North tea?
Yeah. Yeah, I started that, but then I left. I don't know where it ended up.
Oh, they made the tea.
Yeah, I saw that year is like the soap came out. I was like, I got them connected for the soap. And then the eyeshadow palette, it was like mainly me. That was my baby. So yeah, those were some things I did for Cradle, but then I had to leave, right? I don't know. Like, I'd love to have my own harp.
Oh, fuck yeah.
But that's a huge undertaking, maybe one day.
What are the biggest challenges having your own harp? What would be having the nylon strings is a must.
Oh, it just would look ridiculous. It'd be like shaped like a moon, or like it would just be the most ridiculous looking thing on the face of the planet. Like ergonomically, it would make absolutely no sense. It would look like an anime character.
I do remember your keyboard with Cradle was...
Oh, God.
Was interesting. Motion. Yes, because I also spoke to Cohen, and he also plays the same
that
model.
That was his fault. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, he got me hooked up with them, and then I showed it to Danny Filth, and Danny's like, "Oh, I love it, do it." And God, I hated playing it. It was rough to play, but we got through it. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'd love to do like my own brand of hummus.
That'd be hell sick. Yes.
But then, like, all the ideas I had the past 5 years have come out, like pickle hummus and beet hummus, and
delicious.
You know, there's a few more I want to keep in the back of my mind, okay. But like, yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought about a collab in a very, very long time, but maybe in the future there'll be more. I just don't know yet.
I love it. I love it. We're going to wrap this up. Typically, I ask people about their hangover cure. Before we jump into that, though, we will give a shout out to Bradley Zordreger, good friend of both of ours. I love him, and he's awesome.
He's great. He's what I call him, the deathcore king. He's what a unique human. He's been a huge supporter of my career the past, well, since we became friends and no longer had a YouTube beef. I had no idea.
You had a YouTube beef.
Well, he reviewed that Beelzebub's album and didn't give it a very good review.
You know what's funny, though, is that the only way that I knew about Beelzebub was because Bradley Zogdrager brought it up on my episode with him.
Right, right. And he, I just said in the comments, like, he shouldn't have reviewed it. Art's subjective. He didn't get the point of it. Like, Dylan Gowan should have reviewed it. And for 2 years, he thought I hated him. Love Dylan.
We know all the same people. It's so weird we never met.
Yeah, we do. It's so weird that we've never met before. I just don't understand this.
There's no 6 degrees here. It's
no. It's just, what the hell? Finally. That's full so circle funny. Moment. Here we go.
So finally he got over the YouTube comment.
We got over our beef and we've been like best friends ever since. He still calls me almost every day. Great guy.
Oh,
great
awesome.
Guy.
Great, genius. Great manager. Very smart.
Yeah.
Very
marketing
smart.
Marketing genius. Yeah. Very, very absolutely. Smart.
I'm in contact with a gummy company to make worms for Cryptopsy. It's his idea. I'm going to have to tell him that.
He's talked about that with me forever. Yeah, I'm so glad.
It's a good idea. No, because a lady at work's husband works at a very big gummy industry here in Montreal.
I love it.
It's going to happen. So I got to write an email. I typically wrap up with a hangover cure. It does not apply here. Let's do a fight the hops Pedialyte. Instead. Obviously. And it's always in the fridge for the kids when they're sick.
Right?
Fight the hops. What are you doing right now? A very short-term goal, something that you're aspiring to accomplish, let's say, within the next month, the next 2 months. What is a very short-term goal? What are you doing right now to fight the hops?
Oh, man. I don't want to give away too much, but I'll just hint at this. I'm learning how to hold my breath underwater for long amounts of time to be able to be filmed. So I'll leave it at that. Leave it. Maybe have a new single coming out next year.
Wow.
But, you know, when you want to star in your own music videos.
How are you practicing towards that? Now I'm interested.
Looking like a complete moron at the local swimming pool, just like going underwater and holding my breath while like doing all these elaborate movements. And I just look like the special person in the pool. And these kids and old people are like, what is she doing?
You're going to have to like weight down your feet.
I know it's kind of like you let the water all out and you sit at the bottom of the pool for as long as you can.
Wow.
It was really hard at first. I put my head underwater and I'd panic because like my body was like not used to the feeling. I used to be like an avid swimmer when I was a kid. Like, oh my God, I swam all the time. But
I feel like our ears have changed too, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I don't know if the multiple flying ears or the we take good care of our ears, but there's still some abuse going on there.
How many ear infections I've got from my in-ears, and I clean them every day.
Mm.
Life on tour, you know, but yeah, so that's the weird one that I've got going on right now. I think I'm going to pull my partner Corey into it too. He seems pretty enthusiastic about it, but I'm like, are you sure? Acting underwater is really hard. He's like, just pushed me in the pool. I'm like, no, you don't understand. How long can you hold your breath underwater? It's hard. So we'll see what happens.
Interesting. I'm excited for that. Lindsay, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with me, talk about life, talking about music, talking about cider.
Yes,
appreciate you very much. I'm looking forward to hanging out face to face. This was cool. I appreciate it. Yeah. Cheers to you.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
I love it.
Yay, we did it.
Hey, thank you all so, so much for listening to Write the Daniel that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was a long overdue conversation. I can't believe that we never met each other. We know so many of the same people. We are just about the same age. So I'm very, very stoked that I finally did have a conversation with Lindsay. I am super, super in awe of her work ethic and everything that she's accomplished. You should most definitely go check out all of her new stuff that she's got going on, such as that new album that she hinted at, which I imagine is going to come out in 2024. And I hope that she takes some time to relax and recuperate as she planned to in the next month, because it's important to take care of ourselves and to always prioritize getting out of the dark days in a better way. Massive thanks to you, Lindsay, for hanging out with me. I truly, truly appreciate it. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week that contains all of the details of everything that has happened recently in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You get to see which episodes I dropped recently. You will get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will get to hear about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. You will also get to find out what's going on in the world of Cryptopsy and with As Gamora Burns. We have a lot of stuff going on, so if you want to be up to date in that, sign up to the mailing list. The mailing list also includes all the details of all the albums that the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently, and you will get to see which albums Jerry Monk, Vox and Hops' metal architect, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist. There's always a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, so please do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list, because I hate when you miss a single thing. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer month of December. That's right, I am taking 1 month off. This is the final episode of 2023. I will be back with brand new episodes in 2024, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.